I have more of a comment than a question. Everybody in this room wants Mr. Emanuel to lose as soon as possible. They will not fight fair. Therefore, we can't fight fair. Let me say this. I was a union delegate for many years. And the union, I love them, they're my brothers, my brotherhood. They would not even endorse a candidate for mayor until it was too late. They made a complete mockery of endorsing anyone, and it didn't help our chances because they were afraid he was going to win and we'd be penalized. Well, he won and we're penalized. Two, Chicago is the most sectionalized city in the country. No doubt about it. People in South and West want basketball courts. Pilsen wants soccer fields. Everybody on the North wants whatever they can get their hands on. In order for us to ever win, we need to fight unfair. We need to truly be brothers. We need to come together and say what's going on is not only wrong, it's indecent and terribly indecent. The last school I taught in is Mather. We spoke 90 languages in that school. I know diversity. We need to appeal to the new Chicago, the new people. We can't have 10% of all minorities voting, because if they do, we're going to lose forever. Not this election, every election. They are counting on us being apathetic. They are counting on a rainy day so that no one votes. They are counting on this. I've seen it. Look who his friends are. Daley sat while he appointed him to the next seat. It was appalling that he won without a second call for election. I never thought that he would get a majority. When I saw the votes the next day, I couldn't believe it. It was nonsense. Are we going to win? If we are, we don't fight fair anymore. We don't fight fair. We fight as filthy as they are. And we start now.
I would just like to say, we have enough research. I think we're really repeating mistakes of the past. When it comes to how to solve problems in the city, we're not holding anyone accountable for a plan. We have the University of Chicago that has the answers for how to solve the problems with the schools, how to solve the problem even when it comes to crime. Because I worked on one of those research projects that investigated not the Chicago Police Department, because at the time the Chicago Police Department would not allow research of their statistics, but it was another medium-sized police department, Aurora Police Department, right outside of the city. Same problems, because our people have went to that community. And what I'm basically saying is putting money into police instead of schools is not the answer when you don't have a plan for the police to even work effectively. And so, you know, you need to hold this administration accountable for solving the real problems, you know, and not taking money from the schools and giving it to the police and giving it to all these other entities, and then we still have the same problems. We're not going to solve crime in this city until we decide to deal with poverty and race and all of these other issues. And I mean, we have the answers. We're just not, you know, we just do more research, more commissions, more studies, and then business as usual. But you have to take that and really seriously decide that you're going to solve these issues that basically revolve around poverty.
Question for Mr. Johnson, is it, and Ms. Patel. Mayor 1% is not only Mayor of Chicago, he's one of the leaders of the Democratic Party, and of course he's very close to the president, who's another leader of the Democratic Party. So he really represents the interests of the leadership of the Democratic Party. Now, do you think your respective goals and agendas can be met under by pressuring Democrats here at the local level? And a second, just a follow-up, in light of what happened in Seattle, would you support a non-Democratic candidate for mayor?
we'll do one more and then, yeah, and then let them answer. Oh, okay, do I? Yeah, we're going to do like four questions and then have people answer all at once, so why don't you go ahead? So you can go ahead, thanks.
My name is Rodney Pruitt. I'm a displaced teacher. I stood on the stage at the auditorium and helped convince the teachers to walk out. I joined you in front of Fulton's on the river to deal with them. One thing I will say, I used to be head of one of the committees and I resigned because I felt we weren't doing anything. Until this city addresses race and call it as it is, nothing positive will happen in this city. That mayor will be reelected because many of the grassroots protesters do not vote. I am one of the black displaced teachers. Until recently, nothing has been put out in the media that has named us by name. As a black male teacher, we're collateral damage. Until this city addresses race, nothing is going to happen. And this city is a microcosm of the entire country. As long as you have politics that is deliberately vague, trying to cover everybody, the people that need to vote will never vote. Thank you.
Sure. Well, thank you for the questions. Boy, there's a lot. I feel like I'm, you know, listening to the Cliff Kelly show here in Chicago. This is a very smart crowd. But in terms of the first gentleman's question about the role that the Democratic Party has played in the destruction of public education, we have not shied away from that. It's quite clear from, you know, Cory Booker to Mayor Nutter to Rahm Emanuel. These are all Democratic mayors. And so as a black man, I always get a little uncomfortable when both parties agree on what to do with black people. And so in terms of who we support, or who would I would support in any election, one of the things that I'm actually quite cautious about is this need to find a candidate. What I think this room should continue to do is to actually elevate the issues. Because as been laid out, there's no Superman. There's no hero. The heroes are actually those in the room right here that are on the front line every single day. And if a candidate emerges out of the movement, then let's push that individual or individuals forward. If we look at what happened in New York, Bill de Blasio was running in fourth place. No one knew who Bill de Blasio was until the issue of stop and frisk was elevated. He put his black son on television, and then now the rest is history. And so we'll see how Bill de Blasio actually governs, though. And so whether I think it's important that not just here in Chicago, but across this country, that we find candidates who are married to our issues. As far as what Mr. Pruitt is saying, one of the things that I'm actually quite proud of what this union has done is that we've actually reawakened the black caucus within the Chicago Teachers Union. And I'm going to be quite frank with you, we did it under controversy. You know, folks, you're right, Mr. Pruitt, people get very uncomfortable when black folks get in a room and start talking to each other, you know, because we could be planning more than just Thanksgiving dinner. And by the way, we are planning more than just Thanksgiving dinner. And so as we begin to organize black teachers dealing with the issue of the loss of black teachers, it pains me that you have an educated brother in this room that is not in front of our children. And let's be clear, this is intentional. The attack on public education is an attack on public sector. When Dr. King stood on that balcony and that bullet went through his face, he was very clear, fighting for dignity for public sector workers that are overwhelmingly black. And so this room and rooms across this country not only have to tell the story of Mr. Pruitt, but they have to tell the stories of all the black teachers that even pushed the union when the union didn't recognize black teachers. And so I think the final point that I'll make regarding just the issue of black teachers and the loss of black teachers, Ebony Magazine actually did a story on the loss of black teachers. And there is more press that is going to be done around the loss of black teachers. And the thing that made the strike so unique is that we were not afraid, particularly on that third day of the strike, where we called out the Democrats, we called out the Republicans, and we clearly said, Ashawn Johnson made it very clear that these policies are racist and we do have to deal with them. And as we deal with those issues, I'm confident, a little more than Ben, because Ben has been around so much longer than me, so I have not learned how to be a cynical, but I'm confident that we will rise out of the dust as we continue to organize, and candidates will emerge, and who knows, those candidates just might be in this room.
I think the only thing that I'd add is actually, you know, one of the things that Harold Washington did say was that it's not the man, it's the plan, right? And it is about what is our agenda? How do we lift up those issues? And it's true, we can't wait for the one person who's going to save us and rescue us, because it doesn't work that way. And we don't build a long-term movement that way. What happens then when the man is no longer here, and to that movement, right? What are we left in terms of what we've actually still got? So I think for us, we actually have a political organization. We're committed to, you know, to electing independent political electeds who actually ideally do come from our base of folks who don't jump in just because they see an opportunity, but have been part of the fight long before an election came around. I think that how do we actually create a space to for real independent politics in the city? Because it's clear that Democrats in Chicago Democrats aren't the answer for us, and they never have been. And I think there are a lot of tensions in terms of institutions like labor and the sort of struggles all the time with Speaker Madigan or the governor there's always, you know, there's all Preckwinkle, right? Like even the person that people were thinking would be the one who could take on the mayor. You know, there's nobody's Democrats have real issues. And I think that our organizing has to be about the issues, though, and not about just individuals or politics, because that alone is never going to get us to where we need to get to.
You know, if I can just add one thing on sort of the race front, I think one of the things with the mayor is that, you know, he's fought for gay marriage, and he's been on immigration since he's been in City Hall. He's been pro-immigrant, although his time in the past was not necessarily pro-immigrant at all. And, you know, he doesn't say these really outrageous racist things like some politicians who, you know, have these videos going viral say. So I think it's he tries to obscure or the national, you know, the maybe national media or national public doesn't realize how racist his policies end up being. You know, whether he is really a racist in his heart or not almost doesn't matter, because his policies obviously have a racist impact. But since he's one of these mayors that's, you know, more liberal in some ways, I think he's been able to hide that, at least from the larger, I think people in Chicago are well aware of that, but I think, you know, nationally, and that'll will become an interesting issue if he runs for a higher office nationally.
I could just add one other thing to the racist propensity of the mayor of Chicago. If you look at the policies, the failed policies that he pushes, that it does have adverse impact on communities of color. Right now, the mayor of Chicago is pushing mandatory minimum, you know, which is going to exacerbate the prison industrial complex that overwhelmingly is populated with black men. And when the Black Caucus in Illinois actually blocked it from passing, because it wasn't going to pass in Springfield, and Eric Holder, to the Obama administration's credit, are beginning to roll back on mandatory minimums, and Rahm Emanuel is doubling down on it. And what we have discovered, first of all, that locking people up longer does not curb, you know, violence. And so as you begin to look carefully at his policies, you begin to see the leanings that he has that are overwhelmingly against the interests of black and brown people. And I'll just take it one step further, that when you push things like mandatory minimum, it has such tremendous impact on communities, particularly as, you know, teachers, as we, you know, sit in front of classrooms day in and day out, and our children are dealing with the issues of poverty, not having enough food, being homeless, having parents that are in the penal system. After the Black Caucus in Illinois blocked it, the mayor issues a press release the next day saying that he cannot wait to congratulate the sponsor of the bill, which, by the way, the sponsor of the bill does not represent the communities in which he says he wants to help. The mayor went as far as to say that he cannot wait to congratulate this sponsor when the bill passes. So in other words, the mayor is saying that I cannot wait until we lock up more black men. Those are the policies that this man is pushing. And as a community, we have to elevate those issues to make sure that people are engaged so that we can give hope to people like Ben that change will come.
There's a question right over here. You can go first, and then Micah.
My name is Micah Utrecht. Carrie, I read the book, and one of the things I was struck by reading the book is your interviews. You're a very sort of fair and balanced reporter. You seek out the opinion of everybody and everything you write about, and you speak to a lot of union leaders in the book, and you know, we got Brandon on the panel representing the CTU, a certain style of unionism in Chicago. But you speak to people in the book who I would say do not represent that kind of unionism that the CTU represents in the city. I remember you've got quotes from people who were saying things like, "Well, I'm just sure glad whenever Mayor Manning, that he'll even answer my calls. I'm just so happy that he'll even talk to me." You know, you have these really kind of pitiful quotes from a lot of people from the labor movement. And so there are clearly sort of different styles of unionism that are happening in the city. Even a few weeks ago, I read in the Tribune that one of the, why not name names here, one of the city's more progressive unions in the city, Unite Here Local 1, has given money to Rahm Emanuel's re-election campaign, $25,000. So I just wanted reflections on that, about the kind of different visions of unionism that we have in the city and that can be seen in your book.
Say something about that after. Thank you. After a couple more questions. I don't know. Let's see.
Ben, I agree with you that people should be responsible for what they do, whether it's voting, marching, voting on a referendum. I agree with you. But I think it's also important to recognize is that when Emanuel was brought to the city to become mayor, he had a very powerful sponsor, the President of the United States. And that gave him a lot of credibility and a whole bunch of issues that he didn't deserve. But I thought the turning point in all of that was when Ed Burke and Jerry Chico tried to make a political hit on him by denying him his residency status to run for mayor. And so he appeared to be a victim of the Chicago machine. And I thought you put both of them together, and that's how you have an image that people can vote for without knowing a lot of the substance to it. And I think things have changed over the last couple of years, and I'm not saying he's beatable or he doesn't have the money or doesn't have the image, but I think that there's an opening now on the issues, on the candidates, that we wouldn't have had 4 or 5 years ago. So I would be a little bit more hopeful about things. That's all I would say, Ben. And I like your thoughts on that. I mean, you know this stuff far better than I do or a lot of us in this room.
Well, as you might imagine, this is not the first time I've expressed these opinions I have about Chicago's electorate. In regards to the election of Rahm Emanuel, the man was elected with the black vote. And what he's done is just, I mean, I talk about the disdain he has for leftists. I have to wonder about the disdain he has for black residents of the city of Chicago who elected him. I mean, he closes 50 schools and black communities, is not even in town when the announcement comes down. I mean, utter disdain.
The way he treated Karen Lewis.
Yeah, the way he treated Karen Lewis, which I thoroughly enjoy recounting. So, I'm willing to give the citizens of Chicago a makeover. What do they call it in golf? A mulligan? Is that what it's called? I'm willing to give the citizens of Chicago a mulligan. I'll work from the assumption that you're correct, that they were so caught up in Barack Obama's wink and nod to get him out of the White House. And they were so sympathetic to his plight for being challenged on the residency issue, okay, that then they were overwhelmed and they lost touch with their good senses. So they were wrong once. And I like to believe, and I do occasionally show signs of being a believer, Brandon, Amisha. For instance, when I was at a football game, the Northwestern football game, it was in Evanston, right on the border of Wilmette, Rahm's hometown. And when his picture flashed on the screen, because Northwestern, in its infinite wisdom, decided to promote him at the start of the fourth quarter, I don't know why, probably because a payback for the deal at Prentice Hospital. But anyway, when his picture flashed on the screen, people booed, and it was a loud boo. I mean, and this wasn't at Father Flager's church, which he had just been booed the week before, and it wasn't at the V103 party where he'd been booed. This was at the Northwestern football game. So maybe you're correct, and maybe the people have come to their senses and realize that there's a consequence for not paying attention when you have an election, for just voting for someone because you think he's been endorsed by Barack Obama, really, even though Barack Obama's just kicking him out of the White House, and for feeling sympathetic for a person for something like on a residency challenge, which he probably should not have been allowed on the ballot anyway. So I'm willing to concede that there's a possibility that the people of the city of Chicago will prove me wrong this time and rise to the occasion. I'm certainly hoping so.
I think back there? Yeah.
I just wanted to piggyback on what the displaced teacher said about race. Because we're not a homogenous country, really it's an issue of class, and that's why you have the school closings and everything. I'm also a teacher, and so, yeah, we get jaded because truly, like the two-party system, I mean, it doesn't matter. They throw us under the bus. So hopefully, there's a viable alternative. But I don't know. But I appreciate, especially you, Ben Jarafsky, I appreciate all your articles. And you still won't accept my friend request. I'm upset about that. On Facebook, that's all.
Yeah, we'll go. I'm surprised that nobody has investigated the $454 million venture contract, whether the money that's going to that is going to be taken from the buses and trains and the maintenance of the CTA.
Just a comment. I understand that you're disappointed with the people of Chicago, but I think that happens throughout the country. It's not in Chicago only. I mean, we're not given many choices, and these people are making a choice by not doing it, by not voting. I may not be a great choice, but when the political debate is controlled by the 1%, when the two presidential candidates spend $1 billion each, the money that they spent, they're going to answer to. It doesn't matter how you vote or how I vote. And it's not only in this country, it's happening throughout the world. I happen to be Greek, and I understand what's going on there. They're using that as an experiment to see what they're going to do to the rest of the world. And it's really a great fight, and we have to fight in every front. And we can't disparage ourselves or the people that have given up. We try to empower them in some way and say, listen, you can stand up to these people, and our votes can be more strong than their money, basically.
We have time for maybe one or two comments, and anyone else like to make a comment or question?
I had to run out to take care of my meter because that's a whole other issue. But so I don't know if this was addressed while I was gone, but the citizens of New York City stood up this time. Now, we don't, like we said, we don't know how Bill de Blasio is going to govern, but a whole bunch of LGBT people ran away from Christine Quinn because they knew that she was not progressive enough. I want to know, when we're going to get our backbone. I mean, I just was wondering what the panel has to offer about how we can, like, I don't know, like, how can we make people just excited about, you know, voting for somebody who matters? You know, I mean, I know we have to deal with the two-party system, but really we only have one here in Chicago. So it's figuring out who's the most progressive. I don't know. I don't know if I have a question or if it's just a how can we turn the corner in this city like they did in New York and then in a lesser degree L.A. Because the guy they voted for spent time having office hours and didn't spend time in Hollywood. So that's why he got elected. So I don't know. I'm just... Stop voting your constituency and voting for what they believe in. I don't know. I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, I'll talk again in just a minute, but just, I guess, for one last, yeah.
I have a comment, too, and it feels like an observation, and I hope that I state it right. When I travel all over the country. When I talk to people, everybody is against corporate power. Everybody is against privatization. I mean, the majority of people. And when it comes down to it, and I agree with the people on the panel, is when they start fudging about it, is when it comes to the idea of race. And not even of poverty. Everybody's against poverty. But then they have this thing that if they feel like it's helping people of color, that somehow it's some sort of disadvantage to the majority. And it's sad. I'm a native Chicagoan who's since relocated. I live in Los Angeles. I work in New York. And I get saddened by the progressive disintegration of social unity in this city. It's heartbreaking. I see it at other places across the country, but I also see very progressive voices emerging in places like New York and in California. Part of it is because the youth are way more engaged in those states and in those cities. That power shift is arising. And I don't witness that much sense of racism or resentment in younger people as I do in people of my age group and older. Mm-hmm. And so my only hope is in that transition and in that unification and those people being outraged enough to see that their futures have been not only blocked but subverted. So I don't know if I was articulate or not, but that was that's the sense I get and the outrage that pours out through me. So
maybe... each of us just want to make a sort of closing statement and we'll open the bar. Whoever wants to jump in.
I think for me, a lot of what I look at what's happening in the city and what's needed to shift things and to build a movement and why that's so difficult. So much of this is about hopelessness, and we're set up to actually feel hopeless for a very particular reason, right? Of course it's hard. Of course people are not engaged. Of course it feels like nothing can change, that we have no options. We're going to just have to go with the best of a worse situation. And it's all very deliberate. And I feel like, to me, when I think about organizing, an organizer said this to me when I was learning organizing. I used to be a union organizer. And one of the things that she said to me was that organizing was about an individual feeling like they have power. Because if an individual doesn't feel like they have power, this idea of collective power, collective action is pretty meaningless. And we're set up all the time to individually feel that we have no power, and it's not even a feeling, right? I mean, it is. There are real constrictions on our lives and real challenges. But to me, that's what organizing is about, is how do you have those individual connections and relationships and help people see the spark of what's possible, both in their own life and therefore in their communities, in their schools, their workplaces, and in the city. And I do think there is, I absolutely do believe that people in the city get it. I think they get what is at stake. I think they get what's wrong. I think they get that things aren't the way that they want it to be. And I think it's our job as organizers to figure out how do we actually create the spaces and the opportunities for folks to step into that and actually work for progressive change. I think in the city of Chicago, that's like everywhere else, it's not, I mean, that's going to take organizing, and it's going to take us to actually really understand what we're up against and how do we actually, despite what we're up against in terms of racism and poverty and capital and just the sort of the pressure of capitalism on our daily lives, we need to understand that, but also know that we all have major incredible agency despite all of that and resiliency. And to me, it's about how do we create the spaces for people to step in and take action and build real connections and relationships along the way. And I think a lot of that's what's happening on the ground. The question is, how do we get it to scale? Right, I think there's really good work happening across the city. How do we get it to scale? How do we move the labor movement with us? Because it isn't a monolithic place, and there's certainly lots of tensions. But I think all of it, there's all possibilities, and I think there's an incredible spark that the teachers and many other folks have actually shown that of what actually is really possible. The last thing I'll say is you should join our email list. You should like us on Facebook, and you should get engaged because we are organizing in neighborhoods across the city, really working to try to take back Chicago. There's lots of work that folks can do. So we hope that you'll continue the conversation and plug in.
Oh, I'm waiting for Brandon, but... Well, you know, just to defend my wounded pride here, I am not quite as cynical as Brandon and Amisha would have you believe. I actually believe, and this is kind of my own naivete, actually, that what Amisha said was true, that when they had that TIF vote on Wednesday, just the fact that the Chicago City Council had something resembling a debate on this unbelievable scam was a triumph of sort. And I appreciate that you guys had to bang on a lot of doors and make a lot of phone calls to get even that. And the fact that they got 11 aldermen, I'm not quite sure if one of those 11 actually knew how he was voting, but he voted the right way, so I'm counting him as a yes. I think he got confused and voted the wrong way, but whatever. So they had the discussion, they had the vote, so I do believe that it is possible in the city of Chicago to get people to entertain complicated thoughts, ideas, and to try and to examine how their city is governed. But I think the greatest challenge is to try to overcome this sense that is so Chicago that you can cut a deal. You can get your way what you want by sort of making your own private agreement with the person in power. I think that's so pervasive. It's one thing I've learned since moving to Chicago. I'm not from Chicago originally. So I feel there is a cynicism that's in the people of Chicago, in the electorate, and that's very easily manipulated by powerful, wealthy candidates like Rahm Emanuel. So I suppose your challenge is really to... sort of cut through all that. That's my opinion.
Thank you, Ben, for all of the hope that you bring to Chicago. But seriously, I mean, no one quite articulates what I'm thinking in such a smart way. So one of the things that I think was missed during the Chicago Teachers Union strike is that strike set off a wave of strikes across the state of Illinois and quite frankly, across the world. And so if there's any glimpse of hope that you can actually beat back these awful policies that Mayor Emanuel here in Chicago embodies, that even teachers who make $100,000 a year said we want $102,000 a year, and I'm not mad at them. I don't know what it takes to live in Lake Forest. If we do, maybe we'll be in this book about being the 1%. But anyways, you know, we have strikes in Mexico, strikes in Brazil, that there's something that's actually happening across this globe that Chicago can take some credit for actually pushing. And so if the country, quite frankly, if the world is going to make sure that we have a fair tax, right? That the rich are paying their fair share, that you actually have a education system that works for all children and not just those who can afford a quality education. If that's going to happen, it's going to happen because the brothers and sisters in this room make it happen. And so the only thing that I can leave you with is we organize. We knock on doors. We have house meetings. We have meetings in church basements. We do it the way that we know how to, and that's connecting with people, and then let the chips fall where they may. And if it turns out we don't defeat them this time, Jim Crow didn't come down after one blow. We live in a country that has sparked some of the greatest transformations that this world has ever seen, and it was regular, ordinary people, which I hope this is not derogatory, but regular, ordinary people like Carrie and folks in this room that are brave enough to actually stand up and say what is right and say it in very difficult times. And so I'm only encouraged because I'm looking around this room and all of us represent a different segment in this city. So our charge is to leave here and begin to organize our communities, our churches, our fraternities, our sororities, our block clubs, to make sure that the issues are illuminated. And when the candidate emerges, they'll have a platform to run on and not just a party to represent. Thank you.
I think those were perfect words to end on. So thank you, Brandon and Amisha and Ben again, and everybody for coming. And so much thanks to Haymarket Brewery. And please stay and buy drinks and tip well. And thank you again for coming, everyone.